Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Who sells at a time like this? Well, anybody that has cash flow needs.
K-State economist Dan O'Brien.
People that don't have storage available on farm, and they've taken their wheat to the elevator, they hold on to that crop, they'll be paying some type of commercial storage amount. Got people that, as they view the risks that are out there of continuing to hold and paying more costs, they may be compelled to store. To go ahead and sell. Those that have storage or are more likely to view opportunities that could come down the road in as something to hold for, they may not be. It makes a lot of difference whether we're putting wheat in commercial storage or on-farm storage. Commercial storage tend to sell quicker because of the higher costs. On-farm tend to be a little more circumspect about when we pull that trigger.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Heading is nearly complete nationally, 95% on June 26th. That'll be our last look at this for 2022.
Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA with a look at winter wheat heading progress.
Five-year average is 98%. Last year at this time, 98%. We did have some good news in the Northwest where it had been cool and damp. We got some warm, dry weather that really helped to push the crop along. Idaho, for example, a big jump in heading from 44 to 75% during the week ending June 26th. Still behind the five-year average of 90%, but certainly some catching up there in the Northwest.
Now, Rippey also tracks the pace of cotton squaring week by week.
We see squaring on 33% of the national acreage by June 26th. That is equal to the five-year average, 3 percentage points ahead of this time a year ago. And we see all 15 reporting states now reporting some squaring, ranging from 10% in Oklahoma, just starting to square there, all the way up to 83% squaring in Louisiana. It's a wide variety of development pace, depending on what part of the cotton belt you look at.
And how about the latest look at the pace of corn silking?
Now, we do have our first look at corn entering the all-critical temperature and moisture-sensitive reproductive stage of development here for the week ending June 26th. Corn silking, as of that date, 4% nationally. That is on par with the five-year average and the same pace as what we saw last year at this time. Now, in looking at the Midwestern major production areas, we only see one state reporting silking at this time. That is Missouri, 1% of the crop. That's behind the five-year average of 8%. You have to go far beyond the boundaries of the Midwest to find appreciable corn silking. As you move into Kentucky, for example, 10% silking on the 26th of June. Tennessee, 24%, North Carolina, 49%.
Now from corn over to soybeans and focusing on the latest on emergence.
Taking a look at the emergence progress on June 26th, national number 91%. That's on par with the five-year average, but behind last year's emergence pace, 95%. On June 26, 2021. But in the far upper Midwest, remember we've been watching this late development of the crop. It was planted so late in North Dakota, for example. And even with a nice, warm, mostly dry week, we're seeing that North Dakota emergence only reaching 80%, still behind the five-year average of 94%. And that's where a lot of the delays linger there in the far upper Midwest.
And condition ratings.
North Carolina once again jumps out as rapidly deteriorating. 2 weeks ago, just 3% of the North Carolina soybeans rated very poor to poor. That has skyrocketed to 32% on June 26th. Other states reporting double digits for soybeans rated very poor to poor at this time include Ohio at 15%, as well as Nebraska and Indiana, both at 12%, Illinois at 10%, and then in the deep south, Mississippi jumping up a bit this week to 16%.
And finally, rice.
Looking at the rice heading progress for the week ending June 26th, 1/10 of the crop headed, five-year average is 9%. Despite the heat and pockets of dryness, overall rice condition has been holding pretty steadfast amid the conditions in the south that have not been exactly favorable for many other crops. On June 26th, 73% of the rice good to excellent, just 2% very poor to poor. Pretty similar to last week's numbers, 72% and 1% respectively.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'd like to highlight the provisions of S-4030, the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act of 2022.
That's the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, Dr. John Bozeman.
The enhanced reporting on cattle slaughter, carcass weights, and cutout yield will all provide useful information to the entire industry. I think savvy individuals will be able to utilize this information and make better decisions for their operations. Also, numerous industry stakeholders agree that a cattle contract library would be beneficial. Senator Hovind was forward-thinking enough to include funding for such a library in the 2022 Ag Appropriations Bill. Should S-4030 be enacted, this will provide the necessary authorization for the library. I appreciate the sponsors proposing these items. And if it was not for Section 7, the section that creates the mandatory minimums, I would support this legislation. As I listened to the witness who testified in support of the legislation before us, it became clear to me that these bills were born out of frustration. Many of those frustrations I share. At the core, I believe every person involved in production agriculture is concerned about the future of their rural communities and their way of life, and rightly so. Many feel that things are slipping away and that they have not been given a fair shake. Their communities have changed and are no longer the way they once were. The only solution I know of is to foster a system where producer economic viability is the focus, thereby ensuring that farms and ranches stay in families and this vital way of life continues.
That Senate Ag Committee hearing on market transparency featuring Nebraska's Deb Fisher.
Tomorrow will mark 1 year since this committee met to examine issues in the cattle market. And today we considered legislation that poses a solution to issues we heard about in that hearing and from cattle producers for years now. The goal of the legislation is to ensure that every segment of the beef supply chain can succeed by ensuring robust price discovery and market transparency. We know negotiated transactions involve a bid and an ask. They facilitate price discovery to establish the going rate for cattle. We also know that negotiated transactions have drastically declined over the past 20 years. The decline has been especially pronounced in some regions of the country. I understand the value of AMAs. They can provide economic returns and operational efficiencies. However, AMAs rely on the negotiated market, often using publicly reported cash price information to set their base prices. Producer groups almost uniformly acknowledged concern about cash price information becoming too thin. Over the past 2 years, we have witnessed voluntary industry efforts to increase negotiated trade. While there was some success, ultimately, by the industry's own standards, these voluntary efforts failed because of the packers' lack of participation. That brings us here today. We know more market transparency and price discovery are needed, and working in this strong bipartisan fashion with my colleagues from all around the country, our legislation will address these issues. I want to especially acknowledge Senator Grassley, who has worked on this issue for almost 20 years. He understands it. He has been a fighter for it. And I thank him for working with me on my bill so that we could reach a good consensus and be able to move this legislation forward to the floor.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's important to highlight that more than 70% of the corn produced in Brazil is from the safrinha, planted right after the soybean harvest, typically in January and February. Brazil is the third largest global corn producer and exporter, behind the United States and China.
Joanna Calusi is an ag economist with the University of Illinois.
Brazil's second corn crop is expected to produce 3,465 million bushels this season, 45% higher than last season when Brazil was affected by drought. That total would be record-breaking according to the time series data from the National Supply Company, a agency in the Brazilian Ministry of Agriculture. Brazil may produce a historic crop even though April and May were drier than normal. Corn planting the summer suffered because of low soil moisture in some areas. Despite this problem in some areas, the early planting of second crop corn allowed crops to develop better than the last crops in most regions. Yield declines in drought-affected states are offset by gains in other states. Brazil is expected to have yields of about 85 bushels per acre, 32% higher in comparison to last season. In relation to the last 10-year average, the expected yield for these years is 5% higher. In addition to the expected good yields, a 9.7% increase in planted area is another factor that will help Brazil break the record in safrinha production. The planted area this year has exceeded the 40 million acre mark for the first time. This year's acreage increase is similar to the variation last crop season, when the planted area rose 9%. The expansion in corn acreage this year was primarily driven by the increasing profitability of the crop given current high domestic and global prices. In an average harvest season, corn prices in Brazil generally fall, has harvest peaks during June and July, and new supply comes into the market. However, corn prices could continue to climb in the coming months following a global price spike. The U.S. corn production in progress will determine what prices will do in Brazil. So far, the American crop has had problems with late planting and a lack of rain in some parts of the Midwest. The current price trend is also associated with the war in Ukraine, which has disrupted port operations and commercial activity in the Black Sea, sharply increasing uncertainty in the global corn market. The start of this year's harvest coincided with news that Brazil and China had completed negotiations for Brazil to begin exporting corn to China. The Asian country has traditionally imported corn from the United States and Ukraine. The two countries signed a phytosanitary protocol in 2014, but China has rarely imported corn from Brazil since then. The major impediments to trade are the long shipping time and the high freight costs. It has been faster and cheaper for China to import corn from the US and Ukraine. However, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has limited its grain exports, and Brazil, being one of the largest exports of corn, could meet China's demand.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Overall, we're struggling.
Colin Woodall is CEO, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
We're struggling for several reasons. One is we continue to see liquidation of the national herd due to drought, just an unrelenting drought across a significant part of cattle country. And that has a lot of people concerned that in some cases we are seeing a third year of El Nino. In some cases we're entering 5+ years of drought in areas of the country. You know, we're setting records of placement feedlots of cattle, which is not good, because that very clearly indicates that full-scale liquidation continues to be a problem. And we set a record, the highest level, highest percentage since 1986, of cows going to slaughter. And of course, cows, that's our factory. And if we're getting rid of our factory, it does not bode well for us, because demand's good. Demand is extremely good, even with all the inflationary and economic pressures we're seeing right now. The consumer is sticking with us. We need to make sure that we have the product deliver. So the liquidation is a concern. And of course, for those who do have some moisture and are able to maintain their cows, we have all of the input costs. When you're looking at what gas is costing, what diesel is costing, fertilizer, et cetera, it's tough for all of us right now.
Now, how important is demand?
It's absolutely critical to our success. We've got to keep the consumer purchasing beef. And that's what has been surprising to some extent, because beef costs a pretty penny right now in the grocery store, but so do all the alternatives. And as the consumer's coming in and looking at that, knowing they're going to pay more for their groceries, they still want to have a good eating experience. And that's why that demand has remained strong. So we're excited about that. We're going to continue to test those levels that the consumer is willing to pay throughout the summer and probably into the fall, possibly beyond. But so far, it's been positive for us. So we've got to maintain that consumer demand so that way we can do everything we can to keep these markets in a good spot and hopefully be able to maintain the cow inventory that we have left.
Cattle industry also breaking down some news from the Supreme Court, or lack of news.
So this was a question in a lawsuit brought forward by RCAF, basically questioning whether or not the checkoff was still government speech or if it was more private speech being utilized by, at the time, the Montana Beef Council. It was extended to 14 other beef councils after that. But really, it's all about oversight. And the question as to whether the U.S. Department of Agriculture has adequate oversight to ensure that those checkoff dollars are being spent according to the Beef Promotion and Research Act, which was passed as part of the 1985 Farm Bill that established the checkoff. And so for the past 6 years, that question is what has been batted around. And it has been ruled on multiple times that, yes, USDA not only has that authorization and that oversight, but they are utilizing their oversight to ensure those checkoff dollars are being used correctly. And so RCAF was trying to challenge that one more time by asking the Supreme Court to weigh in and listen to the case. And the fact that the Supreme Court denied it and did not even take the case up sends a very clear signal that even the court agrees with what USDA is doing. So that means that every cattle producer listening to us right now should feel good in the fact that those dollars are being accounted for and spent according to the law. So this is a big victory, not only for NCBA as an intervener in this case, but a big victory for the cattle industry and for the checkoff.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We had a great hearing.
Representative G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania is the ranking member of the House Ag Committee.
We actually had two panels. First panel, we had two individuals who, you know, in key positions with USDA on dairy policy and bring a lot of experience literally to the table. So it was great to be able to get their perspective on the provisions of the Farm Bill that are there for dairy, certainly including the dairy margin program, the emergency relief for dairy loss, obviously the things that the RMA is involved in, and we're able to touch on a couple of novel programs that I'm glad to see continue. That was the milk donation reimbursement program and dairy donation program, and then the dairy business innovation initiatives, which are trying to support dairy businesses basically in development, production, marketing, distribution of dairy products. And then the second panel was a great panel. We had the dairy farmer, Lolly Lesher from Pennsylvania, Mike Durkin, who's with Leprino Foods. We were joined by Travis Forgus, who is with Organic Valley and that organic milk market that's out there, and then an economist out of the state of Minnesota that really touched on the dairy provision. So it was a good day.
The hearing was all about dairy, and a focus on the dairy margin protection program that has been very successful. And one of the topics that started circulating is whether this could work for other commodities as well.
It's been an outstanding success, I think, by most measures. And I'm so thankful that the approach we took wasn't based on some reference price, which is kind of hard to do, obviously, with dairy when you're looking at class one per hundredweight price of milk. The fact is that margin is so important, and as I've been saying, agriculture, no matter what the commodity is, whether we're talking crops or dairy, agriculture is a business. And at the end of the day, it's the margin that matters, because we're seeing record prices. You know, I think that at one point last week, I saw per hundredweight prices for dairy come in over $27 per hundredweight, which is just incredible. And normally we would see our dairy farmers would be celebrating that. The problem is with the inflation and the just devastating energy policies that we've been living under now for 18 months, the input costs are significant, and we know that. We see what diesel fuel is going for, propane, fertilizer, if you can get it, the restrictions that we've seen coming out of this administration for crop protection chemicals, all making it very, very difficult, and quite frankly, narrowing that margin at the end of the day. So it's, I think we're very fortunate with the dairy margin coverage that we did go that started that direction in 2014. We finally got it right in 2018. And the margin, when it comes to agriculture, is probably what we should be focusing on.
Ranking member of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're all fully planted and trying to look at the current condition with the cotton crop in general.
Cody Besant is CEO of Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
Dry land, for the most part, is still struggling very much throughout the area, largely just because we've been not able to receive the adequate enough rainfall that we traditionally would have received throughout a growing season. On average, we're probably around 4 to 5 inches below where we normally would be from a traditional rainfall across the area. So that's causing some implications on the crop. Irrigated acres are still relatively prevalent. It is becoming a little bit of a challenge throughout the area because of lower irrigation rates, or the ability to apply enough irrigation to supplement what we have not received throughout the area. And so evapotranspiration, or ET, is becoming a cause and effect. So it takes a lot longer for an irrigation system to get around in a circle, given the humid and the heat conditions we've received, to try to really get that crop continue to boom and go. But that is the overall condition. There are some spots. There are some really good areas that have received some timely rainfall that certainly will make a crop throughout this year, as long as we continue to have timely rains going forward. This week being a good example of that, we had a small spotty set of showers the last couple of days. Hopefully toward the middle of this week, we'll have a couple of more. But it's going to be a challenging year, and I think everybody is well aware with that, knowing going forward just what the cropping conditions are like. But it's nothing that we haven't faced before. It's certainly not like we have faced in 2011, at least not yet. And so there's still a lot of hope for those that can make a crop, those that have the inputs in the ground. The challenge we get into is a rise in input costs. But there are still some pricing opportunities to offset that. But I couple that as well. We have seen the market slip a little bit the last week, and more than a little bit. So people need to be kind of mindful if they're going to move a crop to harvest, and I hope they do, to be able to capture some of the pricing conditions that we have today and not let that go to waste or weather away and miss that pricing opportunity as well.
And with so much volatility in the markets right now, he's got a warning.
Certainly, I hope people are mindful of that as they start to look at the harvest season, if they can get a crop going and really energize it. But marketing conditions are very volatile, at least from our understanding. What is driving some of it is some of the demand and supply aspect, but really a good portion of it is because of the concern going forward of a recession and inflation rates and the overall geopolitical economy that we're seeing really play out. And you see it on a lot of fronts very directly, whether it be on fuel prices, on grocery bills. And that's what the consumer can really understand. The producers really can feel it as we see some of the price decline and volatility that we're seeing today. And so that's why I mentioned for producers to be very mindful, be watchful of the market. If you can capture some price optimism, I certainly would take a look at it. But just understand it's going to be a very swinging and volatile market moving forward.
It's Cody Besant with Plains Cotton Growers, and you found Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Some of the numbers from USDA's recent agricultural trade mission to the United Kingdom, courtesy of Deputy Agriculture Secretary Jill Brana, including 21 U.S. companies represented as part of the delegation.
More than 235 business-to-business meetings with over 40 U.K. buyers. We were joined by 11 State Departments of Agriculture and numerous USDA cooperator groups that joined the trade mission.
Deputy Secretary Brana, speaking with reporters Monday, said in regards to last week's trade mission,
we will have some projected sales results within the next 2 weeks.
Meetings with participating farmer cooperatives and state ag departments in the delegation centered on
how we could further engage to improve the perceptions of U.S. agriculture in the U.K. By far, we talked about opportunities for messaging and for engagement.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.